So I want to spend a few minutes tonight. If you have a Tanakh, that'd be great. If you don't, and you have it on your computer screen, that'd be good too. I'm going to read some Sukkim, and hopefully we'll be able to come to a better understanding of one of the central parshios in the Torah, and that is the parshios immediately preceding and the parsha of Matan Torah. Try to understand it. The more I've studied it over the last couple of weeks, the more mystifying it is. The closer you look at it, the harder it is to understand exactly what's going on. I had extra time on the plane here. I took a Motzei Shabbos plane, Continental, and I had I was in row 27, which is the row right before the lavatory, the bathroom. So I had no recline. Have you ever been in that seat? Terrible seat. No recline, and I had two large yeshivish gentlemen who, it was a Motzei Shabbos flight, and I think they held Rabbeinu Tam, so they didn't have time to shower. So I had planned on sleeping a lot on this flight. I have five children. Kanai Nahar, I just had our fifth child, a daughter, after four boys. Big news in the Hain household. So I was looking forward to this flight, sleeping. I really only had like a chumash with me because I didn't want to have learning time. But, you know, that Yitzhar Hara was there. I wanted to just sleep. And I couldn't do it. So I spent some extra time looking at this week's Parsha. And I want to share with you some of the questions that I have, some of the things that you can think about, and hopefully some answers. I don't think I'm going to be able to answer it all in the time we have, and even if we had more time, I probably wouldn't be able to answer all the questions, but hopefully this will be a springboard for each of you to spend some extra time during the week, and certainly over Shabbos, paying careful attention to the parshas immediately preceding Matan Torah. What I want to try to do in the next few minutes is just figure out exactly what Bnei Yisrael actually heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you guys have a Parsha Klug every week? What day of the week is that?
Wednesday.
Wednesday? Okay, good. So, who gives the Parsha Klug? Rabbi Lipte? No. Rav Kohn. Okay. All right. I hope I'll speak to him afterwards. Okay. We're going to take a look at Prakim Yotes and Chaf in Sefer Shmos and try to figure out exactly what Bnei Yisrael heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what they heard from Moshe, etc. But really, more importantly, try to figure out what was the goal of Matan Torah? What was the goal of Revelation? Was that goal or goals, were those goals accomplished? And what are some of the concerns that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, and the people all have throughout the narrative, throughout the two prakim that detail Matan Torah? Now, there are a couple of other prakim that are relevant to Matan Torah. Parakhav Dal at the end of Mishpatim is connected. Exactly when that transpired is an important question. And also in Parshas Vayeshanan, when Moshe Rabbeinu recapitulates and restates the events, sometimes seemingly with some differences, is also critical for any real study of Matan Torah. We're going to make reference to that briefly, and hopefully we'll be able to gain some insight into what exactly is going on at Matan Torah. Again, the basic questions. Who were the Aseres HaDibros spoken to? What did Bnei Yisrael actually hear from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What was the goal, and were those goals accomplished? And what were the concerns of God, Moshe, and the Jewish people? What really got me thinking about this question this week and going through the Parsha is the opening of the Aseres HaDibros. I'm going to start with Parakaf, Pasuk Aleph, and work backwards, and then go forward from there as well. So if you're following along with the Tanakh, or with the Bar Ilan, or with anything on a computer, that we're going to start with Parakaf, Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Elokim Eskol Advarim Va'ela Lemor. What struck me, and again, I've read these Pesukim a lot of times, heard these Pesukim a lot of times, at least twice a year, I guess, when you factor in Shavuos. What's fascinating about this pasuk is that the Torah doesn't state exactly to whom God spoke these words. Vayidaber Elokim es kol hadvarim ha'ilu lemor. God said all of these following words. Say, Who is the audience? Who is supposed to be the recipient of these words, these utterances, these Aseret HaDibros? I always thought it was all the Jewish people. But it's not so clear. If we work backwards in Perek Yotes, we see that in Pasuk Vav, in Pasuk Tes, Moshe is told, Vayom Rashem Moshe, Hine Anochi Boi, Lecha Ba'av Anan, I'm going to come to you in this thickness of the cloud, Ba'avur Yishma Ha'am B'dabri Imach, V'gam B'cha Yaminu L'olam. I'm going to come down in this cloud, mountainous thickness area, speak to you, we're going to have a conversation, and they'll listen in. And by listening in, they'll believe in you. This is an important moment for them to believe in you, Moshe, as the prophet, the transmitter of Torah. So that almost makes it sound like B'nai Yisrael maybe weren't supposed to be the ones hearing these words. Maybe they're overhearing a conversation between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they're not the audience of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's address. But it's not so simple, because later on in those same psukim, there's another Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Lecha la'am v'kidashtam hayom machar v'chipsusa mosam, v'hayu nechonim liyom ha'shishi, ki v'yom ha'shishi, yered Hashem le'inei cholam al har Sinai. On the third day, be ready, I'm going to come down on Har Sinai. So that makes it sound like they're all supposed to witness this. So if we put those two together, it sounds like they're supposed to overhear a conversation between Moshe and God after or while they're witnessing God descend upon the mountain. Okay? We're clear on that so far? So there seem to be kind of two purposes or two things going on. B'nai Yisrael listening and believing in Moshe by overhearing the conversation, and also B'nai Yisrael having witnessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu descending onto Har Sinai. Okay? And then the psukim continue, and it gets even more confusing. If we're just going to lay a lot of questions down, ask a lot of questions, and then hopefully we'll start to answer. If anybody has any additional questions as you're looking at these psukim, let me know. Because I'm all ears. In Pasuk Yud-Beis, V'igbalta es ha'am saviv le'mor, Hishamru lachem aloz bahar, U'nego v'katzeya kol u'negeya bahar, Mosi mas. Nobody's allowed to touch the mountain. Lo siga bo yad ki sakol yisakel o yaro yare. It's a death penalty. Im behema im ish lo yichyeh. Bimsho chayovel heima yalu bahar. Right? Perek Yud-Tes, Pasuk Yud-Gimel says, when the horn is sounded, then they'll be able to go up the mountain. Okay, this is a very important phrase, which is hotly debated by the Mefarshim, which we don't really think about that much. What does it mean, Bimsho Chayovel Hemi Alu Bahar? When were B'nai Yisrael supposed to go up the mountain? Arts, you got it? When were they supposed to go up the mountain? When the horn is sounded. When was the horn sounded? When was the shofar sounded? So if we read on, the shofar was sounded when HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended onto the mountain. But we just read that they're not supposed to touch the mountain. So are they supposed to go up the mountain or they're not supposed to go up the mountain? Huge machlokas. This phrase, B'msho Chayovel, Hemi Alu Bahar, or B'msho Chayovel, then you do something, appears only one other place in Tanakh. In Sefer Yehoshua, when it comes to fighting Yericho. And there, when the horn is sounded, they're supposed to enter the city. Which makes it sound like B'nai Yisrael, on some level, were supposed to enter or approach, climb, scale Har Sinai when they hear the shofar. That's not what B'nai Yisrael does. They get very scared. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Okay, Moshe goes down, tells the people what to do, says to be ready, and there'll be a kol shofar, chazak ma'od, and everybody, when they even hear about it, is very scared, etc. Then there's one final piece right before Matan Torah, which is also very strange. Very strange. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai pasachah. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, we're running out of time. Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai al Rosh Ahar. Vayikra Hashem al Moshe al Rosh Ahar, Vayal Moshe. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, raid. Ha'ed ba'am pen yeharsu el Hashem yiros v'nafal menu rab. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, go Moshe, warn the people right now, go down, warn them that they're not allowed to come close to the mountain. Right? That sounds familiar. Moshe just did that like 8 psukim ago. Told the people, don't come up to the mountain. If you do, you're going to die. And if you die, that'll be bad. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Radam Ba'am Pen Yersu El Hashem V'gam Akonim, etc. Vayomer Hashem Vayomer Moshe El Hashem. This is 3 psukim before Matan Torah. There's a machloket between God and Moshe. Vayomer Moshe El Hashem Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Lo yuchal ha'am la'lot el har Sinai ki atai dota banu emor hagdalot arba kidashto. Moshe is incredulous and says, "You already they're not coming up. They're not going anywhere. You already told me not. You already told me to tell them not to come up. Easy. No, there's no mystery here. There's no need to restate the warning. It's already been pretty clear. Vayomer Elav Hashem, Lechre, go. Valita Tavi Aroni Mafa Konibam Al Yehersu Alot Al Hashem Pen Yifrotz Bam. Moshe, Hashem doesn't really address Moshe's response. He says, "Nevertheless, Einachanam, you're right. Warn them again." Vayir Moshe Alam Vayomer Alehem, and then we go right into Vayidaver Elokim Eskol Advarim Ha'eino Le'emor. So, in addition to there being a lack of clarity about who the Aseres Hadibros are addressed to, whether it's Bnei Yisrael, whether it's Moshe, that's not clear. What's really strange is that in the moments preceding Matan Torah, sounds like this is immediately before Matan Torah, Moshe is told once again, listen, it's really important, don't come close to the mountain. Make sure they stay away. And Moshe in the end goes ahead and does that. So we have a very strange debate immediately preceding Matan Torah at Har Sinai between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to try to figure out exactly what this debate is about. Did God forget that He had warned the Jewish people about coming up the mountain? Obviously not. Moshe obviously didn't understand what was going on. What was God's intention? What was Moshe's intention? What's also interesting is that in addition to this machlokus, which is explicit in the Psukim, the Gemara in Shabbos says that there was another issue that's being debated here between Moshe and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. What was that issue? Yeah.
2 days versus 3 days.
Exactly. What's your name?
Darren.
Hmm?
Darren Sultan.
Darren Sultan? Excellent. So, according to Chazal, in addition to this explicit debate, there's another debate between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is how many days of preparation, whether it's on the 3rd day or on the 4th day, that the revelation will take place. And incredibly, Moshe in that area kind of asserts his autonomy and says, let's add another day. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, according to Maran Shabbos, agrees and goes along with it. But if that was the plan, or if God thought it would make sense to go with the extra day, why didn't He have the extra day to begin with? It's a very strange machloket. 2 days of prep, 3 days of prep, and especially interesting is that the Gemara reads that machloket into this discussion back and forth between Hashem and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What exactly is the connection between those two debates? 2 versus 3 days, and the question of whether or not to issue a frightening warning immediately preceding Matan Torah. Okay. Finally, just to wrap it up, after the Aseres HaDibros, we read the Chol Am Roim Es Hakolos Es Alapidim Es Veis Kol HaShofar. Remember, Bim Shof HaYovel Hema Yalu Vahar. They hear the shofar, Vesar HaShem Vayar Ha'am Vayanu'u Vayamdu Merachot. So it seems like instead of ascending the mountain, the people retreat. Vayomer El Moshe Daber Atay Imanu B'Nishma Vayidaber Imanu Elokim Penamut. Big machlokes between the Ramban and other Rishonim about when this took place. Did this take place before, during the Aseres HaDibros, or chronologically afterwards? Ramban usually is a big Muktam Mu'uchar guy. Usually doesn't like to change around the word of the Torah. Here he sees no other way around it. He says this conversation took place earlier. It's Ramban on Chaf Tezayin. Again, when exactly this occurred is critical to understanding what exactly the goal of Matan Torah was. Vayomer Moshe al ha'am, al tirau, don't be afraid. Ki levavor nasot etchem ba Elokim. God did this in order to test you. Uvavor tiyeh yiratol pnechem levoti techeto. And in order to inspire awe within you. Vayamor ha'am merachok u'moshe nigash al rafel asher sham Elokim. So even though Moshe says, don't be afraid, what does it sound like at the end of Parakot? Do the people listen to Moshe? Sounds like they were still afraid. and that they still have Moshe as a kind of intermediary, or maybe if this preceded Matan Torah, Moshe had always been an intermediary. So we have a lot of questions on these two. We by no means exhausted all the questions that we could ask. There are a number of other significant issues to discuss, but what I want to try to do in the remaining time is answer some of the questions we asked and begin with trying to figure out exactly which ones of the Aseres HaDibros were heard by Bnei Yisrael and why, and maybe then we can retrace and try to understand some of the anomalies in these psukim, some of the peculiarities in these psukim, and maybe see the larger picture of what the goal of Matan Torah was all about. And really, that's an important thing to figure out. According to the Ramban, it's a mitzvah, lo tase, every day to remember, to not forget the revelation in Har Sinai. So it behooves us to try to figure out what it is we're supposed to try to recall, lest we forget. Try to recall and try to figure out exactly how that speaks to us, this Parshas Yisro, and in general, at this point in our lives, as we're experiencing our own, hopefully, mini-revelation of Torah, try to come back to some lessons that we can draw from. Okay, so when it comes to the question of which Dibros the Bnei Yisrael hear, what are the different possibilities that we can suggest? Anybody? Yes? Okay, so one answer is that they heard all 10. That's maybe Pashup Shat of Psukim. That's the Ibn Ezra's Pshat. Ibn Ezra said they heard all 10. His best proof is from the recapitulation in Devarim, in Parshas Vayeshanan, when Moshe says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said all of these things to you at Har Sinai, B'Kahalchem, Perek Hei Pasuk Yutes, in Devarim. Moshe seems to indicate Etz Hadvarim Ha'ele Diver Hashem El Kol Ka'alchem Bahar Mitoch Ha'esh Ha'anan Ba'arafel Kol Gadol V'lo Yasaf Vayitov Al Shnei Luchos Ha'avanim Vayitneim Eila. Right? So Jarsha says they were all 10. Yes? So I was looking for it. We learned Makos this summer. I'm taking suggestions from those who are interested, and if you want to talk about BMP after the shiur, we'll spend a couple of minutes. I'm not going to be back probably at any point this year, so if you have any questions about it, now would be a good time, and I have some sheets for you. But yeah, go ahead. So at the end of Makos, we have Simoy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Towards you a little Moshe.
Okay. Good.
611 and
right. So the gematria of Torah is 611. So Warren Michael says something like, "We heard six. We got six. Anochi v'lo yielachah mipiat v'urishmanu. We heard those two from Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and the other 611 we got from Moshe. Okay. So that requires some interesting reading of the psukim, because you have to say that the point in time where Bnei Yisrael said we don't want to hear it anymore was, you know, partially during, in the middle. So the Ramban's, you know, kind of lifting of those psukim and maneuvering them would have to go in between the first two and the other eight. Okay, what evidence is there, textual evidence in the psukim, which would support the 2 verses 8 chiluk? Who knows a little grammar? Like the difference between first person and third person. I'm sorry to bring back memories of high school, but it's important. Right? The first two dibros are stated in the first person. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Lo yelecha Elohim achirim al panai. Right? That's in the first person. God is talking directly to the people. Then the rest of them shift and seem to be in the third person. Right? And speak about God as Hashem Elokecha. Right? So we are at the Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Right? What do we have there? We've got the rest of those psukim. Sheish Yom Tavo V'Asikom HaTev Yom HaShvi Shabbat L'Hashem Elokecha. Right? Doesn't say Shabbat Anochi. Right? It says Shabbat L'Hashem Elokecha. Okay. So the two primary shittos are that they either heard all 10, or that there's a difference between the first two and the latter eight. Yeah?
What about, like,
talking directly to them.
Correct, but it's not referring to God in the first person. Meaning, it's not God saying, "I am your God." It's speaking of God in the third person.
Okay.
Even,
what about like?
No, saying you should not do this is not first or third person. The question is, how is the being, in this case God, referring to themselves when they're speaking about when they're right? Does anybody remember Ricky Henderson?
Yeah.
Right? So Ricky Henderson always talked about himself in the third person. Right? Ricky is going to steal more bases than anybody else in history. Ricky's the greatest of all time. That's speaking the third person. That's generally speaking weird to do when you're speaking about yourself, but less weird if somebody else is talking about you. Like if a newspaper reporter is saying Ricky Henderson stole more bases than anybody in the history of the game, that would make sense. That would be the third person. But for Ricky to be talking directly, one of the funny things about Ricky was that he liked to talk in the third person. Like Rabbi Hain likes to give lots of shiurim. You know, that's generally speaking a different way of talking when it's not when you're. It's possible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the last day. It would just be strange that they would be recorded in this fashion if God was directly communicating them to B'nai Yisrael. Okay? Anytime we can mention. There's a funny thing about Rabbi Hanson. Like, he was the most selfish baseball player ever, but the stats that he was good at were statistics that are good for team, like walks, on base percentage, and runs. So even though he was completely obsessed with his own stats, he happened to be really good at those things which helped the team. And so he had an amazing career. He won championships. He has more walks than I think anybody but Barry Bonds, and he doesn't count. And so it's really an incredible thing. There's one other great story. He played for the Mets, and then he went to the Seattle Mariners. And at the same time, this is a great story. Do you guys remember John Olerud?
Yeah.
Okay, John Olerud was the first baseman of the Mets, but he grew up in Washington, so he went to Seattle for the last few years of his career. Now, John Olerud had had a brain surgery at some of his life, so he wore a helmet. So Ricky, who played with John Olerud on the Mets in the early 2000s, then ends up in spring training in Seattle. Seattle Mariners pick him up. And he's walking into spring training, and he sees John Olerud, and he says to a reporter right next to him, "That's the strangest thing. There was some guy in the Mets who also wore a helmet when he was in the field." Not realizing that it was John Olerud who had been his teammate on the Mets. So that's my point. He's completely selfish, but a great baseball player because of the fact that he... Oh, I left out the part. John Olerud wore a helmet in the field. That was the key to the joke. Blue. Okay. So those are the two primary shitos. There is a third shita that some of the Pashtanim suggest that, in fact, B'nai Yisrael didn't really hear anything directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That it was all kind of translated for them. You could read that into the Pesukim as well if you understand that they made the request from HaKadosh Baruch Hu prior to Moshe, prior to the whole Aseret Dibros, and then they maybe didn't hear anything directly, and then it would be interesting to consider, maybe in a certain sense, Matan Torah wasn't as successful as it could have been, or as it should have been. But that we'll leave for another time. What I want to try to do is to explain a middle position. Right? Forget, right? 10, 2 versus 8, and 0. I guess 2 versus 8 is the middle position, but a middle position between all 10 and 2 versus 8, because there is a lot of textual evidence supporting both of those. How do we say both of them? How do we have our cake and eat it too? So the Ramban and the Rambam both, but for very different reasons. The Ramban, because he's trying to read the Pesukim in a certain shot way, and the Rambam in Mor Nebuchadnezzar, because philosophically he doesn't think that B'nai Yisrael as a whole are capable of Nevuah and having this experience. He, that's the Rambam's Shita, that they couldn't have all had the kind of Nevuah which would have merited the ability to understand all 10 Dibros. Both of them come to the following interesting conclusion, which I want to spend a few minutes on. That is that really B'nai Yisrael heard all 10. Maybe they were directed to Moshe Rabbeinu and they overheard it, or they were the intended audience. That's not important for our for our purposes at the moment. They heard all 10, but they really only understood the first two. So that would explain the psukim which say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uttered all 10 to all of Bnei Yisrael. It will also explain the shift, the Gemara in Makos, which says that Moshe Rabbeinu had to teach 8 of the 10, all 611 out of 613, and the shift in the first person to third person, because these last 8 were not heard directly and comprehended and understood directly by Bnei Yisrael. They were first given to Bnei Yisrael, they didn't understand what was going on, and then Moshe Rabbeinu taught it to them, explained it to them, etc., and that's why there's the shift in the first to third person. This is a brilliant kind of resolution. The only question is, how do we understand it? Like, if I asked you, what's easier to comprehend? Which words are easier to make out and understand? Lo tirtzach, do not kill, or Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzeisicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim Mibeis Avadim Lo Yelecha Lo Yimachrim Al Panai? Why are the words Anochi Hashem Elokecha any easier to understand than Lo Tirtzach? You ask me, Lo Tirtzach sounds like it's a lot easier to understand than Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Yeah, Jer
Hashem. It could be the concept that there is Hashem. There is a God, and therefore you shouldn't be another God to very logical, but then the specific laws they can comprehend.
Okay, let's take Joseph's idea and go a little bit deep. Okay? The point is that these first two Dibros, they didn't intellectually understand the content of the words necessarily any more than the last 8. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, according to this theory, HaKadosh Baruch Hu uttered these 10, and it was incredibly overwhelming to the Jewish people. It was an awe-inspiring experience. According to the Medrash, and I think this fits in with this added layer and dimension to what's going on here, according to the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, I think, right? Bnei Yisrael all died and were revived and brought back to life at the time of Matan Torah. It's based on the Pesukim Devarim, where they say nobody's ever heard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and lived. So the Medrash says they also didn't live. They died first and then they came back to life. This was such an awe-inspiring experience, such an overwhelming experience, an overwhelming sensory and spiritual experience, that Bnei Yisrael didn't understand the first two Dibros anymore. What they did was intuited their basic idea without having to understand those words. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch says all 10. And what did Bnei Yisrael walk away from Matan Torah with? There's a God and there's only one God. There's no other God. They may not have understood those words any more than the others, but what we're suggesting is that they experientially felt those first two Dibros in a way that they didn't really need to be taught them. That's why perhaps it retains the first person. So what this then illustrates or illuminates for us is that there are at least two different dimensions or objectives or possible goals of Matan Torah. Moshe, I think, and this is fitting with Moshe's personality and maybe his humility and who he is, Moshe sees Matan Torah as an opportunity for Bnei Yisrael to learn, study with the ultimate charusa, to have this intimate, educational, intellectual, content-based experience. That's why perhaps Moshe says, add another day, make sure they're ready for it, give them more time, you know, prepare for the Bechina another day. And that's also why Moshe is reluctant to warn the people the second before Matan Torah. As a parent and as an educator, if you want your kids to approach, you know, the last thing you want to do right before the test is go up to your kid and say, don't fail, don't fail, don't fail, don't fail, don't fail. Right? Imagine having a study session with HaKadosh Baruch Hu being preceded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu letting Moshe Rabbeinu know, oh, by the way, if they come anywhere near the mountain, they're dead meat. Again, it's not necessarily conducive to the kind of experience that Moshe Rabbeinu envisioned Matan Torah being. And it's not entirely clear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intention was, because he agrees to Moshe Rabbeinu to add the extra day. But at the same time, he's adamant that you have to warn them the second before Har Sinai. It's also unclear, HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be so worried about them approaching and wanting to break through and wanting to connect intimately with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which would suggest that he saw this as that kind of encounter, but at the same time, or not at the same time, but the reaction of Bnei Yisrael is one of retreat, recoil, and fear. So I think for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the very least, first and foremost, Matan Torah is about an experience. It's about the revelation. Pen tishkach et hadvarim asher ruina. Don't forget the experience, the awesomeness of Matan Torah. Whether or not they get all of the content and all the yediyas haTorah and the lamdas and everything else, lo signov is kidnapping and not stealing or whatever it is, that's not as important as having them have this incredible spiritual experience. And so for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not as much prep, warn them right beforehand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Devarim is not disappointed when they can no longer handle it. And maybe that's why the last eight needed to be taught by Moshe, because beyond recognizing, oh my gosh, the experiential element of Matan Torah, there's only one God and there's no other God, the rest of it, the content of Matan Torah, wasn't necessarily there. So I think this is hopefully a petach or a mafteach, a key for each of you to take a look at Matan Torah. There's a fascinating epilogue after Matan Torah where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, warn Bnei Yisrael about a few certain specific things, which is really interesting because it really foreshadows Chet HaEgel, and one of the things we have to try to figure out over these parshas is how much of Chet HaEgel is already embedded within the experience that Bnei Yisrael have. I've always thought that, you know, Chazal or the Mefarshim say the reason for Chet HaEgel was the people were searching for a leader. They didn't have a leader and they wouldn't know how to have contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without a leader. But if you read those psukim carefully and understand these psukim also in this fashion, the reason why Bnei Yisrael make a Chet HaEgel is not because they're afraid to lose their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without a leader. It may be that they're afraid of having a direct connection, too direct a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu minus their leader. So something to think about as we go through these parshios and as we think about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ultimately, Har Sinai was, I believe, intended to be both an educational, intellectual, limun haTorah moment, and in addition, but perhaps primarily, a moment of a spiritual, experiential moment in history. And so when we think about our own development and our own Kabbalas haTorah, I think we need to try to focus on both of those elements in our learning, and sometimes there's going to be, you know, a push and a pull in each of those directions. There are moments, and hopefully for all of you, this year or these years are times where you can really foster a love for the content of Torah, for Limud HaTorah, for the intellectual element of Torah. That's one level. But the other level, the other dimension that's equally as critical, if not more critical from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point, is to foster a connection to Matan Torah as an experience. Matan Torah and Kabbalas HaTorah as a moment of revelation, as a moment of spiritual connectedness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And hopefully, my advice and bracha to each of you is to try to foster both of those elements, both during the year and not to give up on it after your year, but to continue to grow and build on that over the course of the summer.